Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.
This is Jim Rosenhaus. Welcome to Tribe Talk. We join you this week from Baltimore's Camden Yards, where the Indians are taking on the Orioles in a three-game weekend series. On this week's show, as always, we'll take a look at the week gone by. We'll hear from Indians Director of Player Development, Carter Hawkins. We'll also visit with the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson, who was in town recently to take a look at the new Bob Feller exhibit at Progressive Field. And we'll have much more coming your way as we get rolling with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Baltimore's Camden Yards, where the Indians dropped the opener to this series on Friday night by a final score of 4-3, continuing some struggles for the Indians as they fell to 33-39 on the season heading into weekend play on Saturday, potentially in Baltimore, and also Sunday in Baltimore. The weather a little shaky this weekend here in the Middle East states. We take a look at the week in review, and it began in a positive way for the Indians on Sunday, a 1-0 win over the Rays. Cody Anderson's major league debut was just outstanding.
Anderson comes set, and the pitch. Swung on a weak chopper to second. Kipnis gloves it, runs to the bag, steps on second. And another terrific job by Cody Anderson. He's given the Indians 7 shutout innings in his Major League debut. Swing and a bouncing ball up the middle. The shortstop Lindor near second has it. Throws out Butler. Kiermaier to third. 2 down for Evan Longoria. And decision time now for Terry Francona. And he may feel like, you know what? You have done your job today. And Terry Francona is going to take the ball. And Cody Anderson getting back slaps from all of his teammates on the infield. And they're on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. What a rousing ovation and well-deserved. Cody Anderson's major league debut was a work of art.
And the game was tied in the bottom of the ninth inning when David Murphy came to the plate.
The 3-1 pitch. A swing and a fly ball, medium deep center. Kiermaier is going to make the catch. Here comes Perez tagging. The throw to the plate, the slide, the tag. Ball is dropped. Perez steps on the plate, and the Indians win it. He was out at the plate. But Casale couldn't hang on to the throw from Kiermaier, who made a great throw. And the Indians get their first walk-off win of the campaign on the David Murphy sacrifice fly to center.
And that made a winner out of Anderson, who stopped by not only on the post-game show, but also on Monday prior to the Indians game with the Tigers. And Anderson obviously ecstatic a day later about how things turned out in his Major League debut.
It felt great. I had never been past the seventh inning in pro ball, and going into the eighth inning, you know, especially in this big stadium and stuff, the adrenaline takes over and you're able to come through.
And when you look at getting out there and trying to get comfortable quickly, I'm sure early you had some jitters going on. How did you handle that, and how quickly were you able to just settle in?
That first inning, you know, I was out there trying to do a little too much, you know, but Berto did a phenomenal job, you know, helped me out and calling a lot of fastballs to get my command down. And that second inning, I was able to settle in a little bit and just pitch.
You mentioned Roberto Perez, your catcher. How much do you guys discuss things on what you'd like to do and try and get up to speed with each other, not really having worked too much together?
I basically just followed him. You know, he's a veteran guy and knows what he's doing behind the plate. So I just kind of followed him, and that was the game plan.
Obviously, a lot of fun things go into that major league debut. You had your folks here on hand, and you got to see him after the game. What was that like?
It was – I get chills just thinking about it, you know. Very special they got to be here, and couldn't ask for anything more on a Father's Day to be able to bring him in here and spend the day with him.
Cody Anderson joining us. Tribe starting pitcher yesterday, and no decision in a game that went right down to the bottom half of the ninth inning. A lot of pitchers, they get done, they head right up to the clubhouse and start icing and everything that goes along with that. But you stayed in the dugout. How come?
You know, I just wanted to be here, you know, support the team and help cheer them on to a win. Because that's what it's all about, you know, is helping them win. And we came through, and it was special to be out here, you know, on the walk-off sack fly by David Murphy. And it was just, you know, a special thing, especially being here for my first time.
All right, Cody, nice going yesterday. It was fun to watch. Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Then it was on to the Tigers at Progressive Field Monday, an 8-5 Detroit victory, and they backed that up with a 7-3 win on Tuesday. But the Indians would salvage the series with a victory on Wednesday in impressive fashion, 8-2 over the Tigers. And it started in the third inning when Michael Brantley brought in the game's first run.
The pitch to him, and he swings and rips one by Kinsler. Kicks off his glove into right field, a base hit. Kipnis around third will score. Lindor stays at second, makes the turn. Throw back to second. He is tagged out by Iglesias, the shortstop. But give Michael Brantley an RBI single. A hot smash between first and second. Kinsler broke to his left, tried to make a play. He had no chance. Ball skimmed his glove into right field for a hit.
Then another key hit in the inning belonged to Carlos Santana.
Farmer delivers. A swing and a fly ball, right center, on the run as Davis reaches out. He can't make the catch. Over his head, hits the track, goes up against the wall. That'll clear the bases. Brantley and Murphy score, and Santana comes through. A two-out, two-run double to the gap in right center. And that big hit the Indians have so desperately needed is delivered by Carlos Santana. And the Indians now lead it 3-0. Five straight Indians hits off Buck Farmer.
And also a big day for Francisco Lindor. The 0-1 is swung on, driven high and deep. Right field, going and gone. Home run Lindor. His first in the major leagues. Tribe up 4-0. On Lindor's first major league home run. Then in the seventh, it was Yan Gomes.
Now the 0-2. A swing and a little flare job to left center. It gets down, a base hit for Gomes. That'll score Santana. Right behind him is Moss. And Yan Gomes delivers a two-run single to left center. And there's a game breaker. Tribe now leading it by a score of 7-2. And that's a great piece of hitting by Yan Gomes.
And Ryan Rayburn finished out the scoring with a pinch hit double in the eighth.
The pitch swung on, yanked to left. Down the line it goes, fair ball. It'll roll to the wall. Flying home is Kipnis. He scores. Brantley will stop at third and into second with a double as Rayburn. Boy, the Indians are a good pinch hitting team this year. That is 17 pinch hits for the Indians. That's 11 more than the Tigers have, and Ryan Rayburn has his fifth pinch hit.
After the game, Lindor stopped by to talk about his first major league home run.
Congratulations. This has got to be one of those days you've dreamed about.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, I mean, I'm happy because I was capable of helping the team win today. And anytime, whenever you help the team win, that's very important. And I'm happy, and I thank the Lord.
And, Francisco, it seems like you've held your own so far in the major leagues as you get deeper into your second week here. And do you feel like you're starting to get comfortable and the game's slowing down a little bit for you?
Yeah, I mean, the guys are helping me to get settled in and to be very comfortable around them. And I thank them. I'm starting to feel very, very comfortable. But, however, I don't want to get too comfortable. I want to continue to work on my game to help the Indians win day in and day out.
All right, Francisco, I know it's only been a little while. What's the best thing about being a big leaguer?
Oof. Everything, I think. Everything is a lot better than the minor leagues for sure.
Even the food, right?
Yeah. That's a lot better.
And you're up here with one of your buddies from the AAA level, Giovanni Urshela. Is it kind of fun to be going through some of these firsts together, the two of you?
Yes, it is a lot of fun. You know, it's something that we talked about a lot, something that we dreamed. I made it a lot more comfortable for me the first day in Chicago because he was right next to me. I didn't feel weird talking to any of my talking to the guy on my right, so it made it a lot more comfortable for me.
Well, Francisco, you're going to have a lot of these terrific games. Great to have you here in Cleveland. Congratulations, and keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And God willing.
So the Indians had dropped 2 out of 3 to Detroit, but certainly finished the homestand on an upbeat note. After an off day Thursday, it was on to Baltimore Friday night and a 4-3 loss to the Orioles. But Jason Kipnis did extend his hit streak to 20 in the fifth inning. Now Chen into the line. Here comes his 1-1 delivery. Swung on, a slow tapper to the right side. Scooped up by Parmalee. Throws back to Chen, and not in time. Kipnis beat the throw. We'll see if Buck Showalter comes out to challenge. And that will go as a single, and if that call stands, it's a 20-game hit streak for Jason Kipnis. And it will, no challenge from the Orioles manager. So that's a look at your week in review. Stay with us when we come back. Carter Hawkins joins us for the weekly farm report. That's next on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. As always, we visit with Carter Hawkins, the Indians Director of Player Development, the weekly farm report. And this week we'll talk Columbus as well as some all-star talk for some single-A players at Lynchburg for the Indians. That's their high Carolina League affiliate. Though the gist of our chat this week with Carter was about that AAA ball club in Columbus. And we began by asking him about Lonnie Chisenhall and also Jose Ramirez, a couple of players who started the season, spent the first 2-plus months with the Tribe, but because they had been struggling, they were sent to AAA Columbus to try and get their games together. They both have performed well there, and Carter talked about the keys for both to getting back on track.
Yeah, certainly, Rosie, you know, we talk about, you know, AAA manager being one of the toughest jobs in baseball, and it's dealing with situations with, you know, guys coming down from the major leagues, guys coming up from AA. You know, no one really wants to be in Columbus necessarily. Everybody has their eyes on that prize. It's, you know, so close, but, you know, both Lonnie and Jose, you know, certainly are using that time down there to, you know, refine their craft, get back in rhythm, find their timing, you know, start seeing the baseball a little bit better so that, you know, when they do feel good, and we do have that opportunity up in Cleveland, you know, they'll be ready for us and we'll be ready for them. So, you know, doing a good job, you know, in the short time they've been down there. You know, definitely both of those guys have been locked in. Jose's been moving around the infield a little bit. You know, Lonnie's playing some third base, and, you know, hopefully those guys will be able to impact us at some point down the line.
I know sometimes when a player gets sent to AAA because they're struggling up here, you look to make some fundamental changes that they need to work on. Is that the case with either one of these two, or is it more, like you said, about just finding that rhythm again?
Yeah, not as much with Jose and Lonnie right now. You know, there's nothing with Lonnie's swing or Jose's swing or the way that, you know, Jose plays the middle infield that we're trying to make a significant adjustment to. You know, both of those guys have performed at the AAA level and they've performed at the major league level. So, you know, it's getting back to that, you know, accustomed level of performance, just making small tweaks, you know, just to get those guys comfortable again, build their confidence, and, you know, hopefully get them rolling.
Staying on the position player front, Tyler Naquin, a recent promotion from AA Akron, and it seems like he has really taken off at the plate. What are you seeing there from him?
Yeah, Tyler was an interesting case. He, you know, played in Akron last year, was swinging the bat very, very well, had a hand injury that cut his season short, unfortunately. You know, I think if all things being equal, breaking camp in the spring training, we would have liked to have had him in Columbus. However, we had a lot of good outfielders there, and Tyler had a quad strain right before opening day of the minor league season. So we let him go to Akron to kind of get his ducks in a row a little bit, and played very, very well there, kept his head high, even though, you know, he might have deserved to be in a different environment. He didn't act like it one bit, continued to improve his game, and we had that opportunity to get him up to Columbus, and he's been very, very strong up there, swinging the bat well, playing great defense in center field, and, you know, he's certainly on the radar amongst those other outfielders in Columbus as well.
a player we saw last year on a couple of occasions in the major leagues. Jesus Aguilar is back at AAA Columbus again this season. And how's his progress going, and what's he trying to do to try and make that next step consistently?
Yeah, for Jesus, it's just finding the consistency. You know, you see him sometimes. He's one of the best hitters in the organization. You know, spring training, he was strong this year. He just gets in those grooves where he's just such an impact bat that, you know, just a feared part of any lineup, whether it's AAA or whether it's the major league. So it's finding that consistency, with his swing and just his timing. And once he gets there and we have that opportunity in Cleveland, you know, he's definitely a guy that we'll be calling upon.
And in the outfield, James Ramsey is almost, hard to believe, it's almost been a year that he's been in the organization now. And what have you seen that you liked from him as he tries to make his way toward the major leagues?
There's a ton to like with James. You know, he's one of those all-around players. He can play multiple positions defensively. He can run the bases. He can swing the bat very, very well. Has an unbelievable eye. You know, just a guy that knows how to play the game of baseball. Great teammate off the field as well. Great work ethic. There's tons of great things to say about him. And, you know, we feel like he's a major league option for us, certainly. And, you know, kind of like Jesus, it's finding that consistency. He has a little bit more unorthodox approach than most. You know, if you've seen him play, his swing is not the average Joe swing by any means. So just making sure he finds some consistency with that. And when that opportunity comes up, like all these guys, you know, we feel very comfortable, you know, recommending him to come up here to Cleveland.
Indians Farm Director Carter Hawkins joining us. We're talking AAA Columbus for the most part this week. And as you look at the pitchers who have been in Columbus, there have been quite a few this year. And a name popped up the other day that I did not recognize, Jarrett Grube. And I know there are points in time in the season at that AAA level because of the movement where you're scrambling a bit to try and find an arm. Where did he come from, and how do you find these guys sometimes to fill a spot at AAA?
Yeah, so Jarrett comes from the Mexican League. He's been there this year. He was in the major leagues last year for a brief period of time. But, yeah, it's an interesting process. You know, sometimes, you know, for instance, you know, Cody Anderson was starting on Sunday. Sean Markham had been designated. We had a doubleheader on Sunday in Akron, so we just didn't really have an opportunity for any of our pitchers to, you know, to start in Columbus. And so at that point, we talked to our director of pro scouting, Paul Gillespie, assistant director of pro scouting, Victor Wong, and, you know, kind of put some feelers out and tried to find, you know, who's the best pitcher available, starting pitcher available, that also can start on Sunday. And started a search, you know, over the course of a couple of days, and, you know, saw that Jarrett was pitching extremely well down in the Mexican League. He was a guy that, you know, whether he was going to be able to start on Sunday or not, we would have had some interest in, and talked to his agent and was able to, you know, get him from that team in Mexico, fly him from Aguascalientes to Raleigh-Durham over the course of a day, and he started on Sunday, threw well, and got the win. So never a dull moment when you're dealing with AAA, especially when, you know, the major league team roster is in flux, but we're glad to have Jarrett, and, you know, he'll have an opportunity to continue to improve with us.
And I'm sure he knows enough to know that the situation that the Indians had to find that arm. Is it tough sometimes where you have to be a salesman to get him to come here, or is it pretty easy to get them back into the States and want to pitch for an affiliated team?
I think typically if you're honest with these guys and they know they're going to have a fair shot at an opportunity to continue to improve, to, you know, have a shot at the major leagues, you know, that's what everybody wants to be able to do. You know, so if you're an independent ball, if you're in the Mexican League, you know, if you're a free agent, you know, those guys, they want to come. So not as much a sales job as just being open and honest and making sure guys know what opportunity they're getting into. And, you know, once that mutually fits, it's pretty easy to get guys going.
Another pitcher who has shown up on the radar now for Columbus, Carlos Marmol, a former major league closer with the Cubs, and I know the Indians signed him a little while back, and how's he progressing now as he tries to make it back to the big leagues?
He's throwing the ball very well. He changed his arm slot a little bit, raised it up a little, and his command is improved as a result. His velocity is, you know, back in the mid-90s, has a strong slider as well. So, you know, a guy that we saw some video on from him pitching down in the Dominican this offseason, and Ramon Pena, our Latin American director of operations, was down there, saw him, and Paul Gillespie, you know, made the deal to get Carlos here and brought him to extend it, and got him back on track, and, you know, he feels very confident, and, you know, we're really excited to have him in the organization. So, you know, certainly a lot of upside there, you know, with a guy that did close in the major leagues at one point and is still relatively young. So, you know, we feel like he's a guy that potentially could help us out here at some point, and, you know, certainly has the stuff to do that.
And I know he adds to the depth at the AAA level. You like what you have in terms of depth, what you've already seen and what's still there?
Absolutely. I mean, you see guys like Austin Adams, you know, come up from AAA last night. He's throwing 100 miles an hour, you know, and that just speaks to, you know, the types of arms that we've been able to bring into the system. You know, our scouting department's done an outstanding job of bringing guys like Austin, guys like Sean Armstrong, C.C. Lee. You know, there's just a plethora of right-handed arms that, you know, and left-handed arms for that matter, Kyle Crockett, that, you know, we feel like are going to be able to just slot into our major league bullpen, and we won't miss a beat. And you saw Jeff Manship the other night. You know, he was a minor league free agent that, you know, we felt like was, you know, a guy that could help us out, and he certainly did the other night, and we expect him to do that the rest of the year too. So, you know, overall, we feel very good about the depth there, and definitely Tony Arnold and, you know, our guys in AAA have done a great job of making sure that those guys are ready to go.
And we'll finish up this week with Carter on some good things happening at the single-A level for both Lynchburg and Lake County. It's All-Star break week, and for the Carolina League, they play the California League in an All-Star game. This year's game out in Rancho Cucamonga, California, the home of the Carolina or California League. And Bradley Zimmer is there, and also Nelly and Luigi Rodriguez are there. And when you look at the seasons they've had, why can this be a real nice benefit for them to be able to go to an All-Star game and participate in that atmosphere?
I mean, it's cool just from a reward standpoint. You know, those guys to be just recognized for the work that they've done. You know, Nelly Rodriguez, we've talked before about how outstanding of an offseason he had and put himself in such a great position, and to see that turn into results. You know, Brad in his first full season in professional baseball to have that consistent performance and progress over the course of the first half to be recognized. Then Luigi as well, you know, a guy that was kind of off our radar a little bit, and then also was out in Goodyear this offseason, got himself a whole lot stronger, really improved his routines from a fundamental standpoint as well. And, you know, to see that produce some results and then see that to be recognized, you know, on a national level, you know, or externally rather than just, you know, me or Ross or Eric Bender saying, hey, nice job, buddy. So that's pretty cool, you know, and then just for those guys to be around other players and other teams, you know, that are in a similar spot, it's just a great environment for those guys to be in, and it's fun for everybody that's involved in that game.
Well, Carter, I know we covered a bunch today. As always, thanks a lot for coming by.
Thank you, Rosie. I appreciate it.
That's Carter Hawkins, Indians Director of Player Development, talking Columbus and other subjects this week on the Weekly Farm Report. Stay with us. We'll have more to come after this on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus with you in Baltimore, Camden Yards, where the Indians and Orioles are playing a three-game series this weekend. Earlier this week, a varied guest list for us on Tribe Talk and some of our warm-up shows. First, we had a chance to visit with the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson, who was in town last weekend, coincidentally, with the Indians welcoming in their 1995 World Series team. But his main reason for being in Cleveland was to check out the brand new exhibit in the Terrace Club, the Bob Feller exhibit. And he spoke about the importance and his impressions of that exhibit at Progressive Field.
Jim, it's a great display. What the Indians have done with the collection Bob had in Van Meter and their own collections is truly remarkable. And, you know, he's adored nationally for what he's meant to this country, Bob Feller, also for what he's done to baseball, but he's not revered anywhere more so than here in Cleveland. So for the Indians to put together this phenomenal display as a tribute to a true American is really heartwarming.
And fun for you to see something different outside of where you normally are.
Yeah, we love to see history spread out around the country and to see teams embrace their own history. And, you know, Bob had a lot. He had a lot of history, and it's on display here at the ballpark now.
I know a lot of fans here, it's getting closer to that time where Jim Thome's name will come up, Omar Vizquel's name will come up. What do you think about their chances? Certainly it would seem Thome's a shoe-in, but is that too simplistic to say that?
Well, you don't ever want to underscore, I can't underscore how difficult it is to make it to Cooperstown. Very few fans realize that only 1% of those to wear a uniform end up with a plaque in the Hall of Fame. So if you watch all 30 teams this year, maybe 7 or 8 of these guys are going to make it. But when you talk about a Jim Thome or an Omar Vizquel, these are special athletes who not only were so at the top of their craft in what they did on the field, but are guys with great character, integrity, and sportsmanship, which is all part of that package.
How about this year's class? It seems like a good marquee class and a cross-section a little bit, too.
It really is. I mean, these guys, four very different guys. You have three pitchers who have nine Cy Youngs combined, all with more than 3,000 strikeouts, and Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson and John Smoltz. And then you throw Craig Biggio in, a 3,000-hit guy, the all-time doubles leader among right-handed hitters in the National League. And they all got to Cooperstown in different ways. I mean, you know, Biggio grew up on Long Island. He went to Seton Hall. You know, Smoltz is the son of an accordion player, you know, in Michigan, who somehow finds the ability to both start and close and overcome Tommy John surgery. Randy Johnson has to overcome being 6'10 to learn how to pitch downhill. And then you get the opposite side of that in Pedro Martinez at 5'10, who's the winningest pitcher over the last 50 years in terms of winning percentage, and just a great class, and a credit to Cooperstown.
And for some, they get in on that first ballot. Others, it takes a little bit. And when you look at that facet of it, how do things change for a player who maybe doesn't get in that first time but then does either a year or two or several years down the road?
You know, Jim, it's so subjective, and you can make a case really for all of these guys for first year, all of them, all 210 players or 215 players who are now in the Hall of Fame for being first ballot guys, because their stats don't change over time. But the perspective of time helps writers sometimes come to the decision. You need 75% of the writers' vote to get in, and I don't know of any other election in this country where you need 75% to win. And I've talked to a lot of guys, so Jim Rice, Goose Gossage, where it took many, many years for them to get in, and what they told me was that perhaps it was a little bit sweeter having to wait.
Jeff Idelson joining us, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. For those who haven't been, tell us how to get there. When is it open? How easy is it to go and enjoy one of the great museums?
You just hop on Route 90 and you head east for about 7 hours and you come to Cooperstown. We're just off the thruway, or you can fly into Albany. And I came out here today, and it's not that bad of a trip. And we're open the year-round. And, you know, wait for Jim Thome or Omar Vizquel if you want, but you're missing a lot of great Indians history that's already in the Hall of Fame.
And any chance to get in there on induction weekend, how big a crowd do you get?
Well, we're a town of 1,800, which is pretty small, Jim. My high school was bigger than the town of Cooperstown, but last year we had 50,000 people in town for six Hall of Famers who made it last year, and we think this year our class will be as big a draw, if not bigger.
Jeff, thanks so much for coming by. I appreciate it.
Okay, Jim, thank you so much.
That's Jeff Idelson from the Baseball Hall of Fame, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. We also had a chance to visit with a new player on this year's team, Jeff Manship, relief pitcher up from AAA Columbus earlier in the week, and he's thrown the ball well in his limited appearances with the Tribe so far. A veteran major leaguer with a varied background, and certainly a bright spot during some tough days against the Tigers, particularly three shutout innings for Manship in a loss to the Tigers, but he threw the ball well.
You know, I had a little jitters going in that first game. I think last game that I had yesterday, that definitely is how I've been throwing. Been just attacking hitters, getting ahead of guys, and just trying to put people away quickly. And yesterday I had to do that based off just coming in the third inning. And so, where's the fourth inning? fourth inning, yeah. So just coming in then, you know, I had to get as many innings as possible just to help save our bullpen. That's what I was able to do.
And it seemed like you were pretty consistent at the AAA level. I know it's not easy when you come into camp trying to win a major league job and that doesn't happen. How tough is it to be patient down there, especially when you're throwing well?
Honestly, I mean, I've gone through that before. I've played plenty of seasons in AAA, so I kind of knew what to expect. I knew, you know, I'd possibly get my time if I continued to throw well, and that's kind of was what they told me during spring training, was just continue to throw well and we'll get you up here at some point. You know, they held true to that.
And Terry Francona was mentioning after the game that in short spurts, it seems like your stuff may play a little bit better than when you were starting. And do you see that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it just really does allow me just to attack guys and go out there and not really necessarily throw it as hard as I can, but I can definitely put a little more behind it because I know I don't have to save stuff in the tank for later in the game. I definitely enjoy this role. I definitely enjoy being in the bullpen and having those shorter outings.
Jeff Manship joining us. Background-wise, you're a Texas kid who ends up at Notre Dame for college. How does that happen?
Honestly, it was an interesting story. I played on a team that was based out of Columbus, Ohio, after my junior year of high school, and it was called the Ohio Thunder. And great man, Randy McLean, was the guy who held us all. I mean, he brought us all out there. My brother played on the team the year before, and it was a traveling team. And so my roommate was actually going to play shortstop at Notre Dame the next year and told them about me to come down and check me out. And that's pretty much how I ended up there. Once I went to campus and saw it, I fell in love with it, and the rest is history.
and so many great baseball schools in the state of Texas. Did you catch some flack back home?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people were pretty shocked that I was leaving the warm weather to go play in the cold weather. But, you know, in the end, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was the best time of my life there.
And with that said, in terms of the program in Notre Dame, maybe people don't realize that it's pretty darn competitive, too. And what did you get out of it from there?
I didn't even honestly know they really had a good baseball program until I started getting recruited by them and doing a little more research, just because you don't hear about it down south. You always hear about Texas and Rice and schools like that. It was great. Just education was amazing. That was pretty much one of the main reasons I chose it, though, was just the education. My brother went to Stanford the year before, and so I kind of followed in his footsteps and tried to use the education, you know, as the basically the means to get in. So wanted to do everything I could to get the best school possible.
So you have the good education, but now you've had a pretty lengthy professional baseball career with a fair amount of time in the major leagues, most in the American League, a little bit in the National League. Tell us about your hitting exploits and your quest to get that first major league base hit out of the way.
Say, we're actually picking out bats today, getting ready for Pittsburgh. You know, kind of got a sour taste in my mouth with hitting. Last year I blew out my quad trying to beat out an infield single to win the game. But, you know, it was a fun experience hitting. Got to face some pretty good pitchers. Got to face Fernandez, and it was probably one of the scariest things I've ever seen. But, you know, it's always fun. You know, I always try to just do my part, and if I have to bunt it, I have to bunt it. But usually we all want to swing away.
And you come up here at a time where the Indians are trying to find that good consistency. But anytime you're in the major league, still the best part of this game that there can be?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody strives to be here, and you want to stick here. So hopefully I can continue to throw well and stick here for a long time.
All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot for coming by.
Thanks a lot.
That's Jeff Manship, Indians reliever. Stay with us. More to come after this on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus with you this weekend from Baltimore's Camden Yards. And we finish this week with another edition of Tribe Tales from Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio.
Here's a pitch. It's a slow curve. Swing. It's a whipping line drive to left center field.
It's time for another Tribe Tale with Bob DiBiasio.
Joining me now in this edition of Tribe Tales is the owner of a perfect game in Cleveland Indians history, Lenny Barker. Lenny, thanks for taking the time to connect with us. And before we dive into baseball talk, catch us up on the family and what you're up to these days.
All right, I have six kids, a daughter that just had a grandchild a year ago. And I just found out 2 weeks ago that one of my sons, my older son, is having a baby also. So I'm going to be a two-time grandfather.
Congratulations.
And my other three kids are living at home, three boys, Jarrett, Blake, and Jake, and they're all going to Chardon High School, and they're playing football and basketball and baseball there. So that keeps us busy. And I'm also the head baseball coach now at Notre Dame College, which is a great thing going on over here.
Well, you obviously, being a college coach, will be teaching some 21-year-olds at Notre Dame College. Do any of them have the sense that when you were 21 in the 1977 season as a young starting pitcher, you joined a pitching staff that had Gaylord Perry, 38 years old, Doyle Alexander, 26 years old, Burt Blylevin, 26 years old, Doc Ellis, 32 years old, and Nelson Bryles, 33. What was it like as the young kid walking into that rotation?
It was great to get up there. And those guys, especially the Hall of Famers, Bylevin and Fergie Jenkins and Gaylord, just learning from those guys. They taught me a lot when I came in there as a rookie. And you know, to be on a team with three Hall of Famers, especially being a pitcher, and those guys are pitchers themselves. It was a tremendous feeling. It was great.
Well, you were a 19-game winner with the Indians, leading the league in strikeouts, and we'll get to the perfect game in a second. Just some general recollections of your time in the Cleveland Indians organization.
Well, it was great for me because, first of all, when I got traded, I was kind of shocked from Texas, but Cleveland is it's a team that gave me the opportunity to become a big league starting pitcher, and they gave me a shot, and I'm we're always grateful for that. So I learned a lot from those older guys that they kept telling me your time will come, and that's what happened. It took a trade, and that's what happened in Cleveland. I I became a pitcher instead of a thrower. And I had some good pitching coaches on the way. I had Sid Hudson in Texas, but then I had a good pitching coach here. We all, a lot of people will remember Dave Duncan. He's gone on and done great things. So he's just showed me the things about pitching, not throwing, and that's how I developed, and he helped me a great deal.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that perfect game. One of the things that some people may not remember is what Burt Blyleven had a no-hitter going in Minnesota, and our manager, Dave Garcia, had made a move in left field that ended up probably costing Burt his no-hitter when taking Joe Charbonneau out of the game in left field, putting in Larry Littleton. Take us to a conversation you had with Dave Garcia late in the game when he might have been thinking of doing the same thing.
Well, Dave came up to me in the dugout, and he goes, I'm going to put Joe and take Joe out of left field, and I'm going to put Larry Littleton in for him. I said to Dave, I go, Dave, if you take Joe out of the game, you got to take me out of the game. So he left Joe in the game, and the rest is history. But, you know, Joe was a pretty good outfielder. He could get to the ball, and he caught it. But I didn't want the same thing to happen. I try to pitch around Joe anyway out there.
Yeah, of course. One last item on the perfect game. People I know have asked you many times if you were nervous going out to the mound in the ninth inning. And I always love your response.
I was real nervous. I walked out there, picked up the ball, and then I dropped it, and I almost fell flat on my face. So I was pretty nervous. But once I started getting my warm-up pitches and getting back into the flow of the game, I was fine. But, yeah, you know, I knew what was going on, and everybody that was playing on the field knew what was going on. So there was a lot of pressure on a lot of guys. Some guys didn't want the ball hit to them, and some of them did. And, you know, they told me that after the game. So, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I wasn't nervous in the ninth inning.
Well, it was one of the great moments in Indians history, and we thank you for taking the time to connect with us, Lenny, and we wish you and yours the very best and all the luck at Notre Dame College, sir.
All right, Bobby, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Take care.
Lenny Barker, our latest Tribe Tale.
Who keeps you cheering year after year?
And that'll do it for this week's edition of Tribe Talk. Great to have you with us this week. Next weekend, we'll join you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Indians will be back into interleague play against the Pirates, so we sure hope you can join us then. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
Nobody plays harder than the Tribe. We've got the players. These guys are really hot. We've got a future. We're headed to the top. We're on the warpath. It's spreading far and wide. We're talking baseball. Talking Tribe. You're talking baseball. Talking Tribe.
Been listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.